Ryan Stanton here with ASAP Frontline, joined today by Dr. Marianne Gauchy-Hill. This is actually the second time we've talked to her. We've chatted with her before on this podcast, a wealth of pediatric emergency medicine knowledge, also from California. So if you've listened to the Hereshko podcast, and you've heard from another person that's in the UCLA system as well. And what we want to talk about today in your topic, other than being the queen of the conference here, in charge of putting it all together and making it all work well. And as I'm mentioning that, I need to mention the Advanced Pediatric Emergency Medicine Assembly here in Orlando, Florida. Has been a fantastic conference, especially for those that, like myself, community-based physicians who need a little bit of boosting and information for our pediatric care. We want to talk about the something that, you know, makes us all a little bit, makes that anal sphincter a little bit tighter than before, and that's the delivery coming into that emergency department, and some of the techniques and things that we can do to manage difficult deliveries, imminent deliveries, and those sorts of things that we don't do very often. We find that many times there's deliveries at home, there's deliveries in the ambulance, there's deliveries upstairs, there's deliveries in the lobby. But there's not as often deliveries in the emergency department. So how can we manage some of these difficult situations and making sure we give that child the best chance possible? So thank you very much for joining me. Tell us, everybody, a little bit about yourself, and then we'll roll into the babies.
Okay. All right. My name is Dr. Marianne Gauchy-Hill, as you said. I'm boarded in emergency medicine and pediatric emergency medicine. I'm currently the medical director for Los Angeles County Emergency Medical Services Agency, so all the pre-hospital care in LA for both adults and children. And, you know, I have been working in clinically and in academic medicine, in emergency medicine and pediatric emergency medicine for the last 30 years. So a professor at the David Geffen School of Medicine in both pediatrics and emergency medicine, and then have been on faculty for a long time at Harvard UCLA Medical Center.
So this is a new topic for us. We haven't really talked about deliveries in emergency medicine. It's a rare occasion, but it is also an incredibly time critical and a chance that we have to potentially save two lives, but even give a child a chance at a good functional life. So talk to us a little bit more about the topic and some of the things that we're going to face with the difficult delivery in the emergency department or you know, in our case, both of us being emergency EMS medical directors, in that transition point between the home and the hospital setting with EMS in transition to our ER setting and in the ER setting.
Okay, I guess one of the things I should say, you know, straight out is a good lesson is that if there's a prolapse cord, probably the best thing is this patient get to labor and delivery and have a C-section. So how do you facilitate that? And so with a prolapse cord, the issue is that is there compression by whatever the presenting part is on that cord, decreasing pulsations of the cord and therefore causing potential anoxic injury. So really the key thing would be to elevate the presenting part. So we train the paramedics that you elevate the presenting part and you just hold it there until you get to a perinatal center and the patient can go in, or to a hospital and the patient can get a C-section. But what do we do in the ED? There's some other things that you can do. You can put them in Trendelenburg. Certainly, the first thing you do is you put a gloved hand in and you raise a presenting part. But then we can put a Foley in. You can instill between 500 750 cc's in that Foley. The mother's going to be uncomfortable. You'll have to let her know that. And what that does is raise the baby inside the pelvis and therefore raises, hopefully, the baby off the presenting part. So you may be able to release that, and you just want to make sure that the prolapse cord continues to have pulsations. Definitely don't want the mom to push, so you've got to encourage her not to do that. And I talked about the Foley already, and then certainly calling for help soon. Now, some of these kids, some of these deliveries, you see the prolapse cord and it may be a footling breach. If it's really premature, then it's possible the baby's just going to deliver. So you may not have a lot of time, but certainly for full term, I would do everything you can. Some have recommended using tocolytics, indomethacin, sub-Q, terbutaline, magnesium infusions, or IM, if you don't have an IV. Have all been tried. Typically, that's not something we do in the ER. I can't remember the last time I used a tocolytic, but how many times have I seen a prolapse cord and having to deal with that? So that's something you could call your OB colleagues, and as they're trying to, you know, get in to take care of this patient, that's what I would do. And the rare circumstances you have to deliver, and if that's the case, there's a high potential for anoxic injury. So prolapse cord is one of those things where we say, do everything you can not to deliver and wait and so they can get a C-section.
Interestingly, I've seen one prolapse cord as a resident on my OB rotation. I've never seen the OB folks move so quickly as when they recognized that. I walked into triage and into the OB triage, and the woman said, I feel like there's something coming out, and you know, you do the exam as the good intern that you do, and sure enough, there's, you know, you got a little piece of the cord hanging out there, and you know, and I scurry quickly back there because I'd never seen it before, and said, hey, this seems important, can we come, I need you to come take a look at this real quick, take a look, and all of a sudden, whisk, she is gone, action's gone, and she is getting a C-section. And I learned, you know, that we've heard a couple of times in this conference that you learn a lot from mistakes that you make, or, you know, situations that could have gone badly for this case, and actually everything went very well. But, you know, you learn so much on things. I mean, I can still get the visual of the senior resident trying to push that presenting part back up and riding on the bed with the patient into the to get that C-section done. So that prolapsed cord, that's important. If you see something that's coming out and it's not a baby, and it looks kind of like a purple reddish rope, you need to that needs to be high priority. Everything else can stand by as that becomes the critical case to get that done, because you can imagine it's basically the lifeline of that baby that's being compressed at that time. Let's talk about some of the other things from the OB presentations in the emergency department that we're going to be dealing with.
Okay, one of the most common things you might run across, the two other most common things are going to be breech deliveries. We'll talk briefly about that. It's complicated. I'll give a couple hints. Two is shoulder dystocia, and so that can be a problem. We certainly are seeing that children or babies that are, high birth weight, macrosomia, certainly puts you at risk. And then the other thing is nuchal cord. I could just mention this because prolapse cord, nuchal cord. Nuchal cords are a little bit different. See it not uncommonly. I think everybody's seen a nuchal cord. Generally, if the baby, there is enough laxity that in between contractions, you can, with the head exposed, you can release a nuchal cord. There is something called a somersault maneuver where if they have a nuchal cord, you begin, and the head is delivered, the cord's around the neck, you begin delivering the shoulders and the back. And the baby, and put, you flex the head and put the baby's head actually on the mom's suprapubic area, so flexed and over to try to deliver the rest of the body. And that kind of comes out and takes care of it because you've somersaulted over the nuchal cord. If it's super tight, then you may be stuck. You basically put your gloved hand in there, a couple of Kellys, around the cord, about an inch apart, and then cut the cord, but you got to deliver the baby very quickly at that point, and hopefully you don't have shoulder dystocia or else you're really in a bind. So the good news is with most nuchal cords, you can relieve it very simply just by essentially just lifting the cord over. So those are just a couple of hints to help. Hopefully you don't get to the point where you got to cut it and deliver the baby rapidly.
What are some of these cool techniques? I don't say cool techniques. What are some good techniques that the community physician, those can learn for this delivery to handle some of those common things you mentioned? You mentioned the breech deliveries. You mentioned the shoulder dystocia, which is actually going to be one of the little more common ones that you deal with. What are some of those things that techniques you can learn from your practice, and also things you can have the mother do to help alleviate some of these areas of speed bumps that you're going to deal with on a delivery?
Yeah, I think with breech, if it's a premature baby, sometimes the baby just delivers, even if it's foot first. So, you know, you have you have frank breech, complete breech, and foot leg breech. The frank breech is where the legs are lifted up and they're not flexed down. The good news is that the baby's buttock tends to help to cause further dilatation of the cervix and effacement. So it's likely that with a complete breech, you may have complete dilatation and be able to extract the baby. And generally, if the butt comes first, so to speak, I say bottoms up. And so what you do is you lift the bottom up. And then the key thing is you want to avoid head extension. So you can, there can be some compression on the symphysis pubis. You do not want to compress the fundus because you don't want to injure the baby at all. Mm-hmm. So if you press at that, the suprapubic region, that can help the head to flex. So as the butt delivers, you imagine the head going down, dipping that occiput. You want to get it out from the end of the symphysis pubis, and you push down, and then hopefully you can extract the baby at that time. There's it's something called a Marisol maneuver. So what can be done with that compression is that with your gloved hands, your right hand goes to the shoulder to help push the baby's shoulders down, and the other hand is at the level you can, at the maxilla. Some people have actually put their gloved hand in the baby's mouth to flex the head to get it out from under the symphysis pubis so that you're able to deliver the body. So that's with the breech delivery now we're talking, okay? So the goal is you want to deliver the butt, and you get both legs. Now you've got, you know, basically the body in, so the arms and the head in. You can wrap a towel around the pelvis. And key thing here is you don't want to grab around the abdomen such that, because there's a lot of pressure exerted, you actually could cause hepatic or splenic rupture. So you want to be on the bony pelvis. The next thing is slight rotation to relieve the arms, because you don't want the arms ending up extended over the head, because that could lead to hyperextension of the arms and brachial plexus injury. So what you then do is, as you've got the baby's waist, is you twist a little bit, deliver one arm, twist again, deliver the other arm, and now you've got the shoulders, and that's when you go in with that Marisol maneuver that I just talked about, get the head down, and then you should be able to extract the baby's head that way. So that's it for breech delivery. I mean, good luck. It's challenging, but I think it's doable for an emergency physician to go ahead and do that. And, you know, if you just saw a foot, obviously you call for help, but if the baby starts delivering on its own and you've got basically the legs out, you got to go ahead and initiate that delivery. So that's breech. You want me to go on with the, shoulder dystocia. The good news is, first of all, what happens is generally the baby's head is delivered, and then you realize that you can't deliver the anterior shoulder. So in a normal delivery, what happens is the baby, the head engages into the pelvis, right? And then you see the head extending out, and so you see vertex of the head. And so you know it's the vertex because you can feel the fontanelle. The anterior fontanelle is triangular shape. The posterior fontanelle is more of a triangle. And so you feel that. You go, okay, it's vertex. And so what happens is the baby's head comes out. and then rotate slightly to one side, in which case you generally pull the head down to deliver the anterior shoulder. You can't do it. What do you do? Well, the first thing you do is called McRoberts maneuver, is that the woman brings her legs up, you know, really like, generally, if you can get the knees to the to her shoulders, awesome, and you can get an assistant to help the mom do that. And that helps flatten the spine, and it actually elevates the symphysis pubis, so allows for a little bit more diameter, right? Because what's happened is the shoulders are trapped in the pelvic outlet. So what you want to do is you want to flatten the spine, you elevate the symphysis pubis to allow for a greater diameter to deliver that, greater biacromial diameter, actually greater volume in the pelvis to allow for the shoulders to come out. Let's just say that doesn't work. Then the other two maneuvers, one's called a Rubin maneuver, but essentially what you're trying to do is reach in with your gloved hand and push the shoulders forward. So you can do with both the right and the left hand. You can, oftentimes you'll need a, with the posterior shoulder, you may need to do an episiotomy, and I'm not going to get into a lot on that, but I would say you should learn how to do that. Essentially, I'm just, this is down and dirty episiotomy, is that you would inject locally with lidocaine, 1% lidocaine is fine, and use Mayo scissors and just cut down medially, the median raphe. You're at the posterior fourchette, and you just cut down about 3 centimeters or so should be enough. Then your hand can go in posterior shoulder, anterior shoulder, and essentially you're squeezing the shoulders forward to try to decrease the biacromial diameter, and then gentle tug down on the head to release one of the shoulders and the other. If that doesn't work, you can reach in and actually try to twist the baby. It's called the Woods maneuver or Woods screw maneuver, where you're, it's thinking of like a corkscrew. So you're in there with your hands rotating the baby about 180 degrees, between 90 to 180 degrees, and then to release one of the shoulders, either the anterior or the posterior shoulder. And you generally are going to go clockwise, depending on the presentation of the baby, if it's brow versus vertex. But the bottom line is rotate the baby a little bit, and then again, gentle downward pressure, and see if you can relieve that shoulder. Now, the great news is at least half of these cases, just with the McRoberts maneuver, just having the mom bring the legs up, you're good to go. You know, you should be able to relieve that shoulder. And the other thing that is mentioned, helper, is the classic mnemonic for it. So basically, you want to call for help, consider episiotomy, and performing all these various maneuvers that I just mentioned are part of that algorithm. So I think really understanding the McRoberts is probably super key, because most of the cases are going to be handled that way.
And that's the important thing, is to understand is this isn't a type of case that presents that presents as an elective thing. I mean, it's a something that is happening. I mean, yeah. The last precipitous delivery I had, I mean, it wasn't one that got stuck, but one that a woman didn't know she was pregnant, yeah. And she said, I feel like I'm having belly pain, and I feel like I need to push. We're like, no, don't push. And all of a sudden, she just makes this little noise, and this baby squirts out into the bed. Yeah. You know, and that's, you know, one of those things that to talk about is, you know, if you have that precipitous delivery and you have that, and we've gotten everything out now, you know, and mentioning that, you need to make sure it's good to have the access to that type of thing. So when it happens, you don't have to remember exactly all these maneuvers, but having access to it, you know, even putting it with part of the precipitous delivery kit, some sort of checklist or things to remember in order to keep you reminded of things like that. But when it comes to this child that's delivered in the emergency department, meconium staining, not breathing, things like that, what are some things we need to do? Because it's not like typical adults where we want to immediately throw the bag valve mask on and start pumping up. We want to, yeah. There are some things we may want to consider before we start getting the airway secure.
You know, you bring up a great point. I would recommend for all my emergency colleagues, make sure you have some kind of neonatal resuscitation kit. You know, if you try to find all this equipment, it's just it's really a challenge. So we actually keep a whole neonatal kit, you know, things like having, first of all, most of the infants that you're going to deliver in the ED are going to be resuscitated with just basically dry, warm, and stimulate, okay? So you get towels, you dry the head, you do body, and just dry them off and just see how they do. Now, you know, at 1 minute, the pulse ox should be about 60%, and then it goes up, you know, every minute. And so you generally will see by the time you're into, you know, 10 minutes of resuscitation, the baby's all pinked up. But it takes a little time. So just understand that. So dry, warm, stimulate. If the baby's not breathing or not making, you know, is poor tone, so it would be dry, warm, and stimulate, and then you have to ventilate. So then you have to find your small mask, your neonatal bag. Now, you could use an infant bag. That would be no problem. Neonatal bags are between 90 mils and, say, 120 mils. And I like to keep those separate because you don't want to use that to you don't want to use that to ventilate, you know, a six-month-old. You're not going to be able to do it. So I say no neonatal bags around any other place besides where a baby is going to be delivered, okay? So if you have a brand, literally if the baby's delivered in front of you, then you use a neonatal bag. Otherwise, you use an infant bag, okay? So really important concept. And so we keep together the, you know, small mass, the neonatal bag, suction, and we'll talk about meconium, definitely the towels, and then having something, there's these great little, basically it's like a little warming pad that it's just like an ice pack, you squeeze it and it heats up that you can lay the baby on. If as long as you don't have to continue resuscitating, what I would do is dry, warm, stimulate, and then put the baby skin to skin with mom. The question is when do you cut and clamp the cord? We know that by the time you dry, warm, and stimulate, you're probably at least 30 seconds or so. Really, the tenet now and the recommendations from the neonatal resuscitation program is to give it 30 to 60 seconds and then go ahead and clamp the cord, because there's times where the baby doesn't get enough through the placental transfusion, you know, because it can go both ways. And so you want to keep the baby at about the level of the mom and wait about 30 to 60 seconds, if at all possible. Clamp. You don't want to clamp too close to the belly button in case you need to actually do an umbilical line. So leave, leave a generous portion. It can always be cut down later. And go ahead and clamp it. Put the baby skin to skin to the mom to warm the baby and cover them up and off you go, right? That's in the best case scenario. If there's meconium, really the tenant now, regardless of whether they're limp or not limp, you're going to dry, warm, and stimulate, and you can just do standard mouth suction. It's really not recommended to do endotracheal suctioning anymore. So I would just, you're going to dry, warm, and stimulate, you can suction the nose and mouth. Indeed, if you believe that there's airway obstruction, begin to ventilate. You're not getting good chest rise. You can reposition, try again. You can also suction and go for that again. And generally that is enough, repositioning and suctioning to take care of the problem. It may be, too, that you have the wrong size mask, so make sure the mask fits. You know, you want bridge of nose to cleft of chin, avoiding compression of the eyes, and then when you bag a newborn, you want to just say squeeze just until chest rise is initiated, and then the release phase. So with older kids, I say squeeze, release, release, squeeze, release, release, but with neonates, it's squeeze, release, because they need, obviously, higher respiratory rates in order to appropriately ventilate. So squeeze, release. And then, you know, then we're going down the whole algorithm. I'm not going to go down the whole algorithm for you. Just understand that really the algorithm on what you do next is very dependent on what the heart rate is. So if the heart rate is above 60, you're going to ventilate for some more time, and generally probably another 30 seconds or so, and try to get the heart rate above 100, if at all possible. If the heart rate continues to fall and it's below 60, then chest compressions are initiated. Generally, it's felt, because these are anoxic injuries, that doing intubation a little earlier, unlike cardiac arrest and some of the other things. So you would initiate, but then you want to intubate very quickly so that you can do the 3-to-1 ratio, which is what's recommended, 3 compressions to 1 ventilation. And then there's a lot of other stuff to talk about, but at least that gets through most of it. And the drug of choice would be epinephrine in the cases of actual cardiac arrest after newborn delivery as well. So I went through everything with you there. Sorry.
That was fantastic. And that's it. Is, you know, it's just, if we get that perinatal period, I mean, just that right around delivery period, kind of managed, then we can work from there. I mean, that's that, because the sheer panic and the pandemonium around the emergency department, you know, when that baby is delivered for those first couple of minutes is very difficult. And that's why you mentioned the precipitous delivery kits and having everything ready there, because, you know, there is so much, you know, once everybody starts freaking out, it becomes very difficult for them to think clearly and to get everything together. So it needs to say, you know, go get the kit, do this, and let's roll from there. And so, you know, some incredible information. And how can folks get in contact with you, more information if they need it with relation to the precipitous delivery in their emergency department?
Yeah, certainly you could email me. It's MGAUSCHE-Hill, sorry, H-I-L-L. At DHS, so Department of Health Services, so it's dhs.lacounty.gov. Also, we do have, I've been working with our Los Angeles system, we have a LAPD's Ready site. I would go there. We have clinical pathways. We also have what would be in a neonatal kit in that, on that site. So email me, go to lapdsready.org. And the other thing, too, is that, you know, talk to your neonatal colleagues. I mean, 80% of the hospitals in the United States have, you know, either NICUs or nurseries. So go ahead, work collaboratively with them to come up with a kit, when to call them, you know, exactly when they you should call, and some process. And if you email me, I can tell you what our process is, and I'll email you our protocols. But I'd say work with those colleagues and put a kit together so that when they run down with their kit, you have the same equipment. And I've done that with a number of emergency departments, and it's really been helpful.
So Dr. Marianne Galshi-Hill from UCLA, also LA County. Fantastic information. Appreciate your time with us here today. As for me, you can contact me, youreverydaymedicine@gmail.com. That's youreverydaymedicine@gmail.com, @everydaymed on Twitter. And make sure that you're subscribed to our podcast, so you can get all of our 52 yearly editions of The Frontline. And until next time, I am Dr. Ryan Stanton. This is ASAP Frontline.